funny because there's this parallel that I read about now as a practitioner in what we refer to as the creativity crisis. Newsweek did a great piece on this a bunch of years ago. And they talk about the fourth grade slump and how kids start out incredibly creative, risk-taking, adventurous little creatures that they are. And then somewhere around fourth grade or so, they start to decline in their creative ability. Here, they're talking about something called a Torrance test, which is used to measure creative ability. And it's a really simple measure. It's actually really cool. They measured what they call divergent thinking. And they're looking at, if you ask a kid a simple question, like, what are all the things you can do with a red brick? And then they answer. And if they have lots of different ideas, that's a higher score. If their ideas are really different from one another, like use it as a paperweight, use it to launch a chicken across the classroom. Like if their ideas are super different, that's another score. If they have something called resistance to closure, like after the activity is already done, they're still generating ideas and going, that's another point. There's a little bit more to it, but it's a simple measure of creativity. And when they do that, when they measure creativity across someone's upbringing, right around fourth grade, you start to lose it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show,
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the time of the day it is, you are here at the right place at the right time with the right person. And I'm sure you're trying to figure out where in the ham sandwich is Dr. Shields. I am on the road. So again, I like to stay up on my shows, my guests. So I had to pick up everything, take it on the road with me. So I'm not in my studio. If you also notice, I am rocking a NASA shirt. Now, you're probably going to wonder why I'm talking about why I'm rocking a NASA shirt. You'll find out shortly because we're going to talk about something that's really exciting and is somewhat indirectly, directly connected to NASA. But welcome to my show. You know, during my show, I like to introduce you to people with ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. This show is about full potential. And today we're going to talk about creativity. You know, I love creativity. Two of my favorite words in the lexicon is create and to imagine. And creativity has become one of the most highly praised and prestigious concept in modern business. Corporations are extremely keen to have a lot on its around and worry whenever it is in decline. A large lucrative market has emerged, feeding off some of the ill-focused insecurities. And at worst, in a bid to increase creativity, senior executives might be sent to do some finger painting or at least loosen up, dress up, play dress up. But business creativity is a little different from artistic creativity and maybe a little bit of technology creativity. Well, today on Sound Bombing, you will learn how creativity and innovation can help you, yes, can help you solve some of the toughest challenges. How do I know that? Because my next guest began his life as a creative misfit. You know, I kind of imagine him taking things apart, putting them together. His mom, his dad, his grandmother, his grandfather probably complained, boy, stop taking a radio apart. Stop taking a TV apart. Stop doing all these things. But now he's using his imagination to really help and innovation help people all over the world. Come to think of it, he hasn't changed much in years since I've read about him and discovered him just recently. Some of his recent adventures include working with NASA scientists. I told you I was going to bring it back. In the comedic world, we call it a callback. I told you I was going to bring it back. Scientists to reimagine the search for life beyond, designating or designing innovation with NASA, you know, inside of Fortune 500 companies, to seed innovation project, to the UN, to TED Talks, I'm a TED speaker as well, to working with, of course, people like Al Gore, the Obama administration. We got another connection right there. His passion is very similar to mine, but he has somewhat of a cosmic coincidence with his job to help people be more creative, to solve some of the most challenging problems that exist in the world. or might I say, in the universe. He co-founded Innovation Bound and has joined a team of academics, entrepreneurs, consultants, and other creatives and innovation experts just like him to accelerate innovation efforts in science, business, and beyond. I would like to introduce you to my man, Costa Mikalidas, or I'm just going to call him Costa. Costa, welcome to Sound Bombing, brother. Let my listeners know how you are doing and let us know where you are calling in from.
Thank you so much, sir. That was the most gracious intro I've ever had. That was awesome. Thank you. Thank you. I'm coming at you from Tampa, Florida. We're down in the sunshine. It is beautiful here.
Man, Costa, if I would have known that you were in Tampa, we could have done a face-to-face interview, brother. I was just there 4 days ago. I'm working with the great educators in St. Petersburg. I hung out in Tampa. We could have sat on the water, drank some martinis. Well, I don't really drink, but you know, I pretend like I do. And we could have chopped it up right there, had a great time. But hey, you are there. I am here. Welcome to the show, man. I appreciate you hanging out with me today, brother.
You got to reach out next time you're in town. I'm a bit of a digital nomad, originally born and raised in New York City, and then moved to Florida as sort of a better home base and been traveling quite a bit. I'll end up on the other side of the state soon. We're headed toward Kennedy Space Center with my girlfriend. So that'll be lots of fun.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that because I will be back in your neighborhood next month, again, working with the amazing teachers and students and parents in Pinellas County, St. Petersburg. And I'm going to hang out in Tampa. I'm going to hold you to that, brother. So I got you on film, man. Everybody knows he said he's going to hang. And I'm going to rock my, no, I'm not going to wear this shirt. I got to wear. Sometimes
you
I got to
totally wear that shirt.
I love NASA. I have several friends who work for, and I'm in the Maryland, DC area. So again, they probably tapping my phones all the time. I made a mistake and got off the NASA, the NSA, you know, you get off this, I made a mistake and got off the NASA/NSA exit. It was like, oh, okay, we still need to check you out, brother. So I understand. And it was a mistake. I was like, oh, they were friendly. Cole, so they were like, no, but we appreciate, you know, a lot of people get off at the wrong exit, but we still need to check you out. So I understand. I didn't claim it as to be driving while black or driving while with a NASA shirt or driving with a I just know I should not have been there. And they were really, really nice, man. So let's get down to it, man.
I know the exit you're talking about off the 95. Yeah.
But see, you got off and you had credentials, brother. I didn't have credentials.
I think that's it's a really fun one. We nobody has credentials. Everybody has to start from zero. You know, like an entry level job that has those requirements. It's like required 2 years experience for this entry level position. Indeed. If it's entry level, you can't require experience. It's entry level. And that's like the expectation is like, how do you learn how to drive when you don't have a license to try?
Wow. Well, man, I am excited you're here because as I said, two of my favorite words is create and imagine. I mean, I think that those are two words and that you will probably agree or you may disagree. I think as we get older, Costa, we tend to sort of somewhat lose that creative imagination, innovative when we play dress up, when we pretended like we were a doctor, lawyer, teacher, a dad, when we, you know, built forts and we did all these things. And I hate that as we get older, we tend to lose. I think we tend to take fewer risks. But I want to go back to you before we get into to the business of what you're doing. Talk to me about your early stages of creativity, innovation, as I alluded to in your bio, because I'm sure just like you, I grew up in a big city of Chicago and was always trying to create some things. Tell me about your early stages of what attracted you to innovation, creativity. And I'm sure you didn't call it that during that time. If you did, you were probably a weird little kid. If you used those things, I don't know if I would have hung out with you, brother, but go ahead.
Yeah. So for me, it was Legos and never following the instructions. You know, just take the pieces, kind of invent my own thing. So that was the sort of earliest stages. And it's funny because there's this parallel that I read about now as a practitioner in what we refer to as the creativity crisis. Newsweek did a great piece on this a bunch of years ago. And they talk about the fourth grade slump. And how kids start out incredibly creative, risk-taking, adventurous little creatures that they are. And then somewhere around fourth grade or so, they start to decline in their creative ability. Here, they're talking about something called a Torrance test, which is used to measure creative ability. And it's a really simple measure. It's actually really cool. They measure what they call divergent thinking. And they're looking at, if you ask a kid a simple question, like, what are all the things you can do with a red brick? And then they answer. And if they have lots of different ideas, that's a higher score. If their ideas are really different from one another, like use it as a paperweight, use it to launch a chicken across the classroom. Like if their ideas are super different, that's another score. If they have something called resistance to closure, like after the activity is already done, they're still generating ideas and going, that's another point. There's a little bit more to it, but it's a simple measure of creativity. And when they do that, when they measure creativity across someone's upbringing, right around fourth grade, you start to lose it. And we hypothesize that it's about, you start to get standardized exams. There's a right answer to everything. There's this conformity that school teaches you, which is useful in some parts of life. It is relevant to understand a culture's behaviors and to be able to conform in certain contexts, but it's more and more true that it's not worth losing creativity to have that. Creativity is proving to be more and more important, especially as robots and AI systems and, you know, business as it will, can replace the more repetitive tasks that humans have been doing for so long. So if you want to excel, creativity is a huge must at this point in the game.
It's interesting, man. You unpack so much in such a short period of time. Now I'm going to put my education hat on. Dr. Juwan Zakunjufu, who you may not know, he's from Chicago. And I studied him when I was in college. And he did this research on what he called the fourth grade syndrome, where African-American boys lose interest in science and math. Now, you talked about a larger perspective, but you also said the same grade. He studied test scores. He studied reading scores. And he discovered that around the fourth grade, and his research around Black and brown boys, okay? Mm-hmm. But he discovered that they would get in trouble. But before that, first, second, and third grade, they love math. They love science. And how ironic that you say that creative edge tends to shift around that fourth grade piece. And so I just want to say shout out to Dr. Juwan Zakunjufu for introducing that to me over 20 years ago. And then you bring it to a very contemporary time when it comes to technology. How does one measure creativity? You talk about a measurement. I love how the fact that you said taking a brick and all these creative things, and as you get older, you tend to think, you know, a brick is to build a house. How does one then measure creativity?
Yeah, so let's zoom all the way out and come in. So if we zoom all the way out and we talk about innovation, we use the word innovation to describe something that's new and valuable. It's got to have both of those elements, right? We accept that an iPhone is more innovative than a ham sandwich, right? Unless, of course, that ham sandwich is really unique and it's really delicious. And well, if it's unique and delicious, it's new and valuable. It's meeting its purpose as food. One of its purposes to be tasty. The other one could be to be healthy. So if it's healthy, fantastic. And then it's unique and interesting. So that's the novelty component. So if you have components of novelty and components of value, you have an innovative product. We also use the word innovation to refer to the process. So innovation is the process that results in these new and useful outcomes. And I say outcomes because sometimes it's a product. Sometimes it's a service. Sometimes it's a change in the way that a teacher interacts with their students that makes them more engaged and more disciplined in the classroom. That's not a product or service. That's like a new technique. So all these things are game. Now, that's if you zoom all the way out. That's how we measure innovation. As you start to zoom in, there's other measures you start to need. When you get to individual creativity, you can look at styles. So different people are creative in different ways. It's a really accessible skill once you start to teach it because different people have different talents they could leverage. So you look at styles. There are things in the environment and environmental factors. So you can measure the psychological climate in a classroom or in a company and understand how much it's conducive to creativity or not. You can measure more scalar abilities, the way we're used to measuring things in sports, for example, how much of something can you do? So how many ideas can you come up with? How original are they compared to other people's ideas, et cetera? So there's a variety of different measures.
So I want to go back, and because you talked about school, you and I both are TED speakers, and I don't know if you're familiar with Sir Ken Robinson. He did one of the most
I love that guy
TED talks called "Do Schools Kill Creativity?" Now, when you think about how young people are being graded, then we're going to eventually get into the business world and how we can sort of be innovative there. But let's talk about when we were younger. You know, you talked about Legos. Mine. I didn't do Legos as much. I did something called Lincoln Logs, and I love Lincoln Logs. I think I love the smell of Lincoln Logs. Maybe it was, I don't know if you know what Lincoln, but I went into a school in Florida. I went into a school in Florida, and I saw some Lincoln Logs. Man, why did I walk into black? It took me back. The kids were probably looking like, what the hell is this man doing? So I was like, and then I had
my niece and nephew have my hand-me-down Lincoln log. So they've got mine. They still smell like that.
So I'm not the only one. Let's talk about Sir Ken Robinson. You know, Sir Ken Robinson transitioned a couple of years ago. He died. He had the number one TED Talks. So do you feel the schools kill creativity? And if that's true, then did it not kill yours, or did it exasperate it to a whole different level?
Yeah. Ooh, these are fun questions. I got to put on a little bit of an introspective hat and think about my childhood. But I think schools do kill creativity. They kind of have to. They're set up in a way that they have to. Like, teachers have to get their students able to pass standardized exams, to progress in a curriculum that is set. Many of the subjects have known right answers and known ways to get to those right answers. So we're not even teaching different methods to get an answer. So for a lot of valid reasons, schools kind of have to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't also teach creativity, creative writing, arts, humanities. There's so many sort of subjects that that afford opportunities to enhance, you know, kids' creativity. You can also do it in math. You can also do it in science. It's a little bit more interesting to try and do it in those subjects, but you can definitely leverage creative thinking in those areas. If you can think of puzzles or math as a puzzle, creativity is required to solve puzzles. So there are lots of opportunities to sort of weave creativity into the classroom. Actually, I have a colleague who's up at the Buffalo Institute for Studies in Creativity. What is it? It's the Center for Studies in Creativity. It's at Buffalo State College. Apologies. Cindy Burnett is a professor there, and she has a book on weaving creativity into the classroom. Really, really brilliant stuff. So I think schools have to kill creativity as they're set up, but they're set up to kill creativity because they have to achieve certain goals, but they have an opportunity not to. They have an opportunity actually to teach kids how to flip their orientation, how to sort of think from the other side of their brain, or wear a different hat and be creative, think in creative ways.
How do you help teachers mold a kid who is very, very creative? How do you help teachers be more creative with the curriculum? Now, I know you're not an educator, but you study research and you talk about creativity and innovation. But then what message do you have for teachers who want to be more creative in the classroom, because they're starting to see kids who are very, very creative in their perspective, in their thinking, and their approach to education?
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you my best answer, but I also have to refer you to Ismet Mamnoon and Cindy Burnett, who are experts at this. They're professionals. They will make rooms full of teachers beam with excitement in getting to do this in the classroom. So I'll give you the best answer I can. If you're in a classroom and you're working with kids and you're looking to enhance their creativity, the orientation that needs to change is the orientation to mistakes. The nature of that shift that happens around fourth grade, it's something like the students start to try to give you the right answer so they can please you, right? They want the teacher to accept them, and they think the right answer is the way to do that. If you ask a kid in kindergarten a question, they just come up with answers because it's interesting to them. They're just kind of following their curiosity. So I think curiosity is the easiest way. You just kind of make students curious about something and let them explore and make discoveries. You have to change their relationship to mistakes. They can't, like, when they do this with educators, sometimes they use mistake tickets. Like, the teacher trainer will literally hand out little tickets, and they go, every time you make a mistake, you rip a ticket off, throw it in the air, say you made a mistake. This example is from a professor up at the ICSC. And if you run out of tickets, just come to me and I'll give you some more tickets. So they're just kind of encouraging mistake making and enjoying making mistakes, because we've sort of stigmatized it over the course of education. So yeah, there's two things.
I think that's great, because when you look at an engineer's perspective, it is about learning from the mistakes, learning about the lessons, and also in a science field, from discovering whatever they're discovering. Now I want to go to your process. I love to get in people's heads. I love, there's somebody that I know, you probably know, his name is Kanye West. And Kanye West has a great documentary out that actually a friend of mine shot, which I'm really proud of that process. But, you know, Kanye West is an innovator. He's very, very creative. And I can name tons of people who've done these things, from Bill Gates. I mean, there are just tons of people. But I want to talk about your process. What steps do you take to develop an innovative idea or concept as you approach an idea or a concept? Let's talk to me about the steps you typically take.
Yeah. So there are five habits that I try to embrace. I also teach these in a one-on-one course I can tell you all about later if you'd like. The first one is to come up with lots of ideas. So if I'm faced with a situation where creativity is relevant, and there are, of course, situations where it's not, if you're going out to lunch, you don't need 100 ideas on what you're going to eat for lunch. One that you're satisfied with is enough, and that's fine. So if you try to use creativity in every aspect of your life, you kind of live your whole life on tangents. So it's relevant to think about when you want to deploy these skills. But when you're ready to deploy them, one of the things I do is come up with lots of ideas. When we work with scientists, so this is my day job, we generate hundreds of ideas on potential research concepts. And a group, let's say over a 5-day conference, may land on 5 to 7 ideas that they sort of pitch by the end. They've started out with 100 or 200 potential research ideas. So coming up with lots and lots of ideas. There's a fun little activity we could do with the audience if you'd like that explains why we do this.
Love it. We want to walk our audience. My audience is open. We have people on here that hypnotize, magic. This is what we do on the show, brother.
You got it. All right. So if you're listening along, just throw up 3 fingers. If you're driving, do this later. And I want you to think of 3 ideas for superhero powers. What would be some cool superhero powers?
And once you think, do it as well.
Yeah, you can play along if you want. So okay. Once you think of your 3, and then what'll happen is I'll name a bunch and you have to drop those fingers if I've named one of the ones you've thought of. Right. So, all right. Flying, super speed, super strength, reading minds, traveling through time. Oh, I got all. Okay. Traveling through time, climbing on walls, walking through walls. Let's just do it for the rest of the audience. Laser vision, speaking or communicating with animals, controlling or manipulating time, like pause time or travel through time. And then I may have forgotten some.
All right. I want to throw this in there. Paying my student loans.
Nice.
Not just mine, but everybody in America. So we still wait for Joe Biden to do it right. And that.
You did the Thanos finger snap for student loans. Like, what we're illustrating here is that when you ask the brain a question, it reaches for easy answers. It reaches to your memories, things you saw in Marvel movies recently, comic books you read as a kid. If I ask for superhero powers, your brain goes to where it has easy access to those. It takes a while before you think of something like harnessing political apathy as a renewable source of energy, or the ability to grow any vegetable you want out of your beard, or vibrating your ears to amplify the Wi-Fi signal. Like it takes a while before your brain starts thinking in those ways. So that's why we come up with lots of ideas, because as you generate more, you have a larger pool, and statistically, there's more likely to be a really good one in there. And then two, as you go further, the concentration of novel, interesting ideas starts to grow because your brain's just, you've exhausted all the normal answers. And so now you're onto your original thinking. And a lot of people just don't have the patience to get to that part of their thinking. So one of the biggest things I try to teach is come up with lots of ideas. I do this myself. This is a hugely important skill in creativity.
Wow, man, that is brilliant. And it can be fun. It can be fun. It can be somewhat frustrating because most people go to the things that are familiar. But when I thought of that student loan thing just hit me, I'm guaranteeing somebody's listening to the show was like, yes, I want that superhero to fly in my city, my hamlet, my town, my village, my planet, to wipe out all those student loan debt. So you get a chance to work with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I know how artists can be, that, you know, creatives can be and innovators can be. There could be some challenges. So Costa, tell me about a time when you and a colleague disagreed on an innovation, and then how did you creatively, I'm going to throw that in there, or innovatively resolve an issue?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. On resolution. So in creativity, we try our best to create an environment that's conducive to open debate. And I give you an example of this. I ran a warm-up exercise for an HR group. They asked me, what can you do in 8 minutes? It's like, 8? Okay, 8 minutes. We'll run an open debate. Let's do that. And so it was an open debate on flexible work options. And so I went up and I was like, okay, flexible work options, work from home, unlimited work from home, virtual check-in, partial, et cetera. What are the flexible work options? And we're going to do a debate with this audience. Who here thinks, by show of hands, that flexible work options are good for the organization and its people? And most of the hands in the room went up. It was an HR audience. Most of those people invented that stuff. So, okay, hands go up. And then, okay, who thinks we've gone too far? And then you had some hands go up. You had maybe 10, 20% of the room. I said, okay, cool. There are six chairs on the stage. I want one person on each side of the debate to come up and occupy the first two chairs. And so they did. We had someone who thought we'd gone way too far and someone who was really pro these flexible work options. And I said, okay, now we have some empty chairs. During the course of this debate, the people on the stage can speak. If you're in the audience, you can't speak. You're in listen mode. But you have the right at any point in time to get up, occupy one of those chairs, engage in the debate. And then when you're done, you've said your piece, you vacate the chair and you go back into the audience. So that's an open debate. We had a room of 70 people, but anyone had the right to come up on stage and take part in the dialogue. We added two things. One is if you're in the audience, you hear something you like, you can snap your fingers as a way of showing affirmation. And if you hear something you don't like, you can moan or groan or what, as long as your mouth is shut, it's fine. The sort of Marge Simpson, one of those. So the people on stage had this sort of vocal feedback from the audience on whether people were affirming or disaffirming. What's interesting about these open debates is really brilliant moments happen. There was a moment at the end where someone who was arguing that we'd gone too far is talking about building a culture and how when you build a team culture or an organizational culture, it helps to have everybody there. Otherwise, your voice just isn't as heard. And a woman stands up in the back, starts walking to the front. She's in a long spaghetti slap dress, blonde hair, super pregnant, comes in profile, turns and sits. And everybody immediately laughs and applauds. And like, even before she had spoken, they got her point, which was that if it weren't for flexible work options, she wouldn't even have a job. And so I think one of the things we try to do is make the debate open. Everyone has to be able to engage in the debate, and then you get to better outcomes that way.
I love that. Great visuals for those folks that are out there listening. I want to sort of stay in the business realm. I want to share a quote with you from Ted Levitt, a former editor of the Howard Business Review. And he said, one of the most incisive commentators on innovation to appear in our pages, he takes dead aim at the assumption that creativity is superior to conformity. He argues that creativity, as it's commonly defined, is the ability to come up with brilliantly novel ideas can actually be destructive to business. What are your thoughts from this quote right here from Ted Levitt?
Yeah, I suppose it depends on what kind of death you'd like. if you want the sort of violence
or fast death.
Yeah. I mean, a severe lack of creativity will lead to a slow death. And then perhaps uncontrolled, reckless creativity can lead to a very fast death. I don't believe that creativity is the only value and that all other values are irrelevant. I think extremism in general doesn't work. But I do believe that creativity plays a tremendous role, perhaps even half the role of what companies do. Certainly without creativity, a company can't be founded or created in the first place because it didn't exist. Now it exists, so you had to invent it. So it's certainly relevant in the creation of an organization. And it's probably hyper-relevant if there's a lot of disruption in the marketplace, whether you're defending against disruption and playing defense, or whether you're trying to lead the disruption, you're playing offense in a market. In either case, you're going to need to be creative. The way I like to think about it for individual people inside of organizations is you're managing a polarity. So on one end of the polarity, you're trying to be really efficient, really productive. If you're a manager, you're maximizing for productivity. If you're an individual contributor, you're managing your time to try to produce as many widgets as you can for the amount of time you've got, et cetera. On the other side of the pole, you have creativity, where you're taking your time in your job to solve a problem or invent a new solution or do something creative, create a new way to approach something. And in organizations that are in disruptive markets that are actively changing, the necessity to do the creative thing is probably a little larger. This is also, so if you give time to one thing, you take time away from the other thing, but not exactly, not super proportionally. So let's say you take the least productive part of the work week and you go, my employees are super not productive on Fridays. They don't even want to be here on Fridays. So that's when I let them do the creative thing, where they do all their productive work sort of in 4 days a week. And then we get to the fifth and we go, hey, what would you guys like to do next year if we have a little bit of extra, you know, you give them a blank slate, like what can we do that's something new? Or you give them a predicament and say, hey, this customer service thing that's been troubling everybody for 5 years now, what might we do to finally solve this? And so you introduce this sort of a little bit of creative thinking to solve a new problem in the company. So you don't have to lose one to gain the other. You can find harmonic balance between these things.
Well, speaking of balance, I'm sure my listeners are hearing two different words, and I'm thinking of a seesaw or a teeter-totter. Mm-hmm. On one side, I'm seeing innovation. On the other side, I'm seeing creativity. You know, Costa, would you say that they're the same? Would you say that they're different? Because I envision a kid on one side, innovation. I think of another kid on the other side, says creativity going up and down. Is there something in the middle? Are they the same? Are they two different worlds? Are they two different words we're talking about?
So let's do the whole defining thing. There's technology as well, and sort of technology comes in here and has an interesting role. So let's build the whole model. And definitions are just models. What's really important is the meaning. And so going through the process of defining for yourself or for your organization is way more valuable than a definition that you could look up. Because people use words in different ways and language evolves, and that's totally okay. And definitions are also multidimensional. There's different aspects to things. So innovation, for example, we use as a verb and a noun. An innovation, the iPhone is an innovation. The people at Apple innovated a new kind of smartphone. They innovated the smartphone. Okay, cool. So we have a verb and a noun. So there are multi-dimensions. There are multiple dimensions to these words. But let's zoom all the way back. So let's imagine our human society, and over the course of 50 years, life transforms, right? Things are so different than they were 50 years ago. We have, you know, video conferencing. We're doing this recording at distance. This is incredible that we can even do this.
This is George Jetson stage, man. I just shared this with my son. Like, who would have ever thought I was a kid watching the Jetsons, then this thing would be in real time.
So creativity and innovation and technology are fundamentally concerned with how that transformational change happened over time. So I get to work with scientists, I get to do work with businesses, and more lately, I try to work with individuals, artists, et cetera. So it's sort of beyond those domains with big budgets and shiny labs. And what happens that transforms society over time is this sort of handing over the innovation down a chain. So scientists, and here I don't strictly mean someone with a PhD, lots of different people do scientific activities in their lives. So scientists are fundamentally concerned with discovering new knowledge. They try to figure out things about the objective world that we didn't know before. And when they do that, they hand over that new knowledge to engineers. And again, engineers here, you don't have to have the degree, you just have to do the activity. Engineers take new knowledge and they make new technology. So we take new knowledge about how electrons behave in nature, for example, and we invent new types of information technology or electrical engineering. So those technologies get handed over to the next group, which are the entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs take new technology and they make new products and services. So quantum mechanics was the science behind the modern day computer circuitry, and the computer circuitry and the technology that was handed to entrepreneurs, you know, enabled all of the products and services that are on your smartphone in your pocket now. And so that sort of chain of handing things down is the innovation process at scale when you zoom all the way back. And what you could probably do is put the artists ahead of the scientists and say that artists inspire our imaginations in order to be able to make new discoveries. So you probably put the artists right up at the beginning. And so that chain is how we create new technologies, new products and services, and how we transform our society. So innovation at the largest scale is that whole thing, the super high level process that creates those new transformations. Creativity is what goes on in one individual's head in order to make that happen. So creativity is your imagination at work in your mind on one specific problem. Creativity is the zoomed in individual capability.
I love the way that you broke down both of them, but you know, the $1 million question has always been this. Can then creativity be taught?
Yes, that's the one word answer. Happy to go into why, but yes, it can be taught.
But I hear people all the time, Costa, and I'm so, say this, and I'm going to come back to what they say, and I'm so glad that you elevated artists to the front, because I'm an artist, folks in my circle are artists, but I hear people always say, well, I'm not that creative. You know, now this whole big thing is paint and sip. You see this, in particular, you see a lot of women doing it, not saying I'm throwing stones at women, but I see guys do it, but a lot of women get together, they drink, and they paint. And I'm seeing men do it as well. But I know when I first started seeing, it was women doing it. And then people are like, well, I'm not an artist. But then you look at, I don't know if it's the alcohol that's getting these men and women to become creative, or the confidence, or maybe being, here we go, maybe being in a creative space with other people who also may feel that way as well. And so I hear a lot of people say, man, I'm not creative. It's like people say this. My mentor is Dr. Freeman Wabowski, president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, one of the most intelligent men on this planet. And he always say, I hate when people say, I'm not a math person. I'm not a math person. You never hear people say, I'm not an English person. I'm not a so-and-so. But they always say, I'm not a math person. So if it can be taught, which you said, yes, why do people tend to convince themselves, Costa, that they're not creative?
Let's say that, here's a fun metaphorical story to example. So let's say that a great leader emerged in our society who is in a wheelchair. And in order to emulate this great leader, we all wanted to live like they did. And we all got into wheelchairs and we lived that way. Just manifesting an example. And so you're a kid, you go to school, when you're in fourth grade, you get your wheelchair and you sit in the wheelchair and then you live your life that way. We're all on wheels. It's a wheeled society. You know, President Wheeler or whoever this fictional sort of character we've invented here is someone that we want to emulate and so on and so forth. And that's like people saying, I'm not a walker, because I've been on wheels for so long.
Great example.
Again, I'm not trying to create an example to disparage anybody. I understand all that. But what is true is that your ability to walk was always there. You inherit that from nature. Nature is, I think this is a more philosophical thought, but I think we're creative because nature is creative and because we inherit that from nature. Creativity was always there. I think Picasso's famous quote was, all children are born artists. I think I know this from Ken Robinson. All children, the problem is to remain an artist as you get older. So I think when I get engaged in teaching creativity, what I'm really trying to do is dust it off, pull it out, and let someone do what's completely natural to do.
Yeah, I love it because they call that being in the flow. It's like when you're in the flow and time stands still, it's like when you're teaching a lesson, when you're painting a piece of artwork. And they did the research around, like, Costa, if you had to paint for a client as opposed to paint for yourself, you're really into your stuff because you can pull those things out. Now, I know from what I research with you, from listening to you right now, I know you've gotten an opportunity to work with a lot of people. But tell me, and tell my audience, what is the most interesting innovation project you've worked on?
Oh, that's a hard question for me. Okay. So it's probably between a project with the National Science Foundation on building synthetic cells and the project with NASA that I talk a lot about in reimagining the search for life beyond Earth. Mm. That's probably, do you want to pick one of those two?
Hey, I'm going to go for NASA. Rocking my NASA. Shout out to my friend, Dr. Renee Horton. She's a NASA scientist. When people say it's not rocket science, I'm like, yeah, she is a rocket scientist. So shout out to Dr. Renee Horton. If you ever get a chance to meet her, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Go ahead.
Very cool. So we did a project. This was really important for me personally too. We did a project with NASA. Hotel conference center, small breakout room, about 28 scientists, something like that. And their challenge, these are astrobiologists mostly. And then there was like someone who does a very weird kind of chemistry. There were a couple chemists in the room. And then like an heliophysicist who studies the sun, and a couple of others. So mostly astrobiologists, mix of some other sciences in there. And their challenge was to rethink how we search for life beyond Earth. So, okay, we have this carbon-based sort of life in the varieties that we know it on Earth, all sorts of animals and plants and bacteria and us and a whole bunch of things. And what we'd been doing for so long is we were looking with telescopes at other star systems, and we're looking for planets that are like ours, certain distance from a star, the sort of Goldilocks conditions, water on the surface, oxygen-rich atmosphere. We're looking for us. And what we don't know is if there is other life in the universe, is it anything like us? Because if it's not, then we're looking in the wrong places. And so this was, how do we reimagine this search? How do we look differently? And it's a phenomenally interesting challenge because you're talking about unknown unknowns. You're just squarely in the unknown realm because there's nothing to hold on except our understanding of the history of the Earth and then some random information about other planets. And two things hit me when we were doing that project. So for me personally, what hit me is that we are facilitating creative process at the highest level and that I had a responsibility to figure out how to translate this for everyone else. So creativity is not just for people with shiny laboratories and big budgets. It's for all of us. And so my mission has been trying to figure out how to bring it to everybody. How do you put it in language that everybody understands? How do you make it accessible? How do you make it relevant? And so I am actively building an innovation 101 course, which is now open and people can get into. We can talk about that whenever you want.
I'm ready, man. That was a great segue. First of all, what have you discovered? Because I know my listeners are going to be like, so what has he discovered about other planets, other life? Before we get into the course, is there anything that you discovered that you can share? I know a lot of times you can't share some of the things that are out there. What are some things can share that you discovered? Not about the process, not about working together as a collective, but what are some things that you discovered that you can share with my listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't have government clearance. I've never been to Area 51. No, I don't know if there's some, like, we already discovered aliens 50 years ago, blah, blah. I don't know anything like that. So to my best knowledge, we have not yet discovered life on another planet or anything like that.
That is that's a great response. That's why I got pulled over and they turned me around. That's why you're able to get past, brother. You are not telling the secret. Well, you do have some secrets. Tell us the secrets to your class. I want people to know how to be a part of your course. I looked at it and I think I'm going to reach out to my partner that I work with because I think we could use some unpacking with some of the things that are in my head. Tell us about your innovative one-on-one course. Now, he can share this with you because, again, he won't get locked up with this information. We hope he does. Go ahead.
No, what I was saying before is I don't have government clearance. So if there is something, I don't know about it. So, but what we had learned, and here's the reference. So there's a gentleman named Lee Cronin who's doing some really, really interesting work around this. So if the science really does interest you, I would check out Lee Cronin. I've hosted him in a podcast, and he has also recently been on the Lex Fridman show for like 4 hours. That was a long one. So if you're interested in science stuff, it's awesome. For the Innovation 101 course, the example I like to use is the Wright brothers. So the Wright brothers were a couple of bicycle shop owners in the late 1800s who invented the airplane. Like there's no reason it should have been them. Like they didn't have the budget, they didn't have the funding, they didn't have the site, they didn't have anything. They're starting from scratch and somehow they did it. And they succeeded where scientists and engineers and people with huge budgets failed. And so that's the power of creativity and innovation. And so when I try to teach it, that's the example I try to emulate. That's the style of creativity I try and teach. So there are five habits in the course. One is coming up with lots of ideas, which we went over. The other four are using feedback to improve ideas, asking the right questions, testing early and often, and being ready to improvise. And the improviser is actually a really interesting mode of innovation. So improv is some magical stuff too. Those are the five skills we teach. And then we sandwich that between what is innovation, just sort of understanding what is it and what would it mean to you if you could be more innovative in your life? Just understanding your motives creatively. And then we sandwich it at the end with what we call, are you innovation bound? Being innovation bound means you are likely to go out there and innovate. And that's the attitude piece. It's like, what attitude do you approach the problems in your life with? And if you get the attitudes right and you've got the meaning right and you have the skills to start, that's it. And the rest is engaging those skills and developing mastery over time.
So then how do people enroll in the course and how could they reach out to you and get in contact with you if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. So innovationbound.com/101101. So that's the URL. Check out the course. We currently have a discount. It's $35. It's an early bird discount. So the course is fresh. We are actively developing it. So when you jump in, your feedback is super useful in helping shape the course. Also, there's not 10,000 people in the course right now. There are less. So you get to interact sort of one-on-one. You get a lot of personal attention. So it's a good time to jump in.
The course is $35?
$35. Yep.
Oh, listen.
The point is to make it accessible.
Hey, I love how accessible you make it. Listen, listeners, go out, join this course. I am right now, I'm letting you know, I am going to join the course because I need to be in a class. I'm such a student of life, and I love learning and learning, and I'm always building, but I have all these ideas that are just running through my mind. And Costa, I'm sure you can relate to that. Before you leave, if there's one thing people should take away from anything from this interview, you know, what would you hope that would be?
Yeah, I think courage is what I'd like to leave people with the most. If you're going to go out there and try to do something new, you're engaging the unknown, you're trying to solve a problem that's new and difficult and challenging to you or in general, you need to have the courage to persist. It's not going to work on the first try. It's probably not going to work on the first 10. That's okay. If you can enjoy the process of trying and just have fun through it, remain courageous and keep going, you will succeed.
That is a great way to end the first segment, but you cannot leave, brother. The second part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions or Rapid Fire Questions. The difference between the first part is I gave you an opportunity to sort of stretch out some of your answers. This time I need you to respond to them as quickly as possible. But you're innovative and you're creative. I don't even know why I need to explain these rules to you. Are you ready? That's all I want to know. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. What's your favorite word?
Creativity.
What is one thing that people might not expect that you like?
Handstands.
What's your favorite quote?
Come and get them.
What's your spirit animal?
Eagle.
What moves you to tears of joy?
Special ed kids' successes.
What moves you to tears of sorrow?
The state of Greece. I'm Greek.
I figured you were Greek. I was going to talk about that earlier. Last name. What do you wish you had more time to do?
Go to space.
What is a gift that you've given to several people?
The Tao of Pooh by Benjamin Hoff.
If you were in the Mr. America or the Mr. Greek talent competition, what would your talent be?
Can I say handstands again?
Yes, you can. My brother, Costa Michalidas, thank you for hanging out with me, brother. You have been a pleasure, a joy to talk to, man. Thank you for the course. I am telling you, I am going to join the course. To all my creative innovators out there, listen, listen, listen. Join this course. Check out what he's doing. Listen to what he's, you know, follow everything that he's writing about and lecturing and from his talks and things of that nature. I encourage you to do that, man. Costa, thanks for hanging out, brother.
I appreciate you.
And I cannot do this without myself and my team and also my man Supremacy for our theme music. Can't do it without you. Listen. Go subscribe to the show. Stop being stingy. Share me with all of your friends. We're on every social media platform. Also, this coming Saturday, we have our Women's Empowerment Summit. I encourage you to check it out. Go to EmpowerU 2022. Again, go to EmpowerU2022.com. Check out me on all social media. And thanks for tuning in. As always, go out and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Shout out to NASA.